Just Dope, A Leading Attorney's Personal Journey Inside the War on Drugs, by Allison Margolin, narrated by Sonia Simmons, published by North Atlantic Books. To my loving and supportive husband, John, thank you for sharing your life and soul with me. To Dr. Jeff Krausman, in loving memory, I would never have gotten through my dark days without you, or be here to write this without you. Preface. I've wanted to write this book since I was 8 years old, sitting at the warm, yellowing formica of my grandmother's kitchen table. For those who know anything about my background, two lawyers for parents, a stoner dad, growing up in Beverly Hills in the 70s and 80s, my writing this book will not come as a surprise. Somewhere in my brain, I kept the image of this book, even though I didn't know the shape it would take. I grew up in the middle of the marijuana legalization movement. My dad, Bruce, counted people like Ram Dass and Timothy Leary as his friends. His career as a criminal attorney inspired me to follow the same path. At least, I'm sure that's the most obvious story to people on the outside looking in. But my grandmother, Gutta Peck, was my greatest champion. If anyone encouraged me to write, it was she. Similarly, my career in the law, my even applying to Harvard Law School and taking the California bar exam, is owed to my mother, Elise. Oddly enough, these two straight-laced women, who, as far as I can tell, rarely touched any drug stronger than aspirin, have been the biggest influence on my long gestating book on drugs and the law. They showed me that drugs, the law, and society are connected. Since becoming an attorney in December 2002, I have represented dealers and addicts, cartel bosses, and alleged Russian crime lords. I've faced down corrupt prosecutors, crooked cops, and prejudiced, power-mad judges. All the while, I kept this book in mind and told myself I was collecting material. I jotted notes on the reverse sides of transcripts and case briefs. I went in and out of practice with my dad. I started my own firm. Over 15 years later, I had the stories, but my practice was failing. When California legalized recreational marijuana in 2016, I was thrilled. Then the criminal cases dwindled and my firm suffered. I had a terrible revelation. I had made a name for myself as a pro-legalization figure, and I vocally opposed drug prohibition every chance I got. Yet I was still profiting off the very system I hated. My clients were the ones who had been caught in this system. And they were the lucky ones. Anyone who could afford me was in a far preferable position to that of the vast majority of defendants. Then I thought back to my dad's career. He paid for my education, first at Columbia University, then Harvard Law, with money he earned by representing clients with drug possession charges. My life, my career, just about everything I had, it had all been funded by the spoils of anti-drug legislation. I was humbled, to put it mildly. My firm added cannabis business licensing to our list of services. In fact, as I write this preface, I'm arranging the license for a client I represented in a criminal case over 10 years ago. The licensing services have not only offered me psychic relief, they've also given me the time and resources to finally sit down and make this book a reality. And my vision for the book has expanded from a straightforward autobiography, in which I was the scrappy young lawyer battling an unjust system, to a memoir with an argument. The war on drugs is bullshit. No matter how many anti-drug laws policymakers enact, people will always find some way to alter their consciousness. In my application to Harvard Law, I argued that the drug war is a war on people's personal liberties. That lofty ideal aside, prohibition also simply does not work. My hope is that everyone who reads this book will understand that we all have something to lose in this fight. My memories are the source of much of this material, although I have sought corroboration from family and friends when possible. Where accounts conflict, I make sure to note that the story is my perspective, not historical record. For stories like trials, I used court transcripts and media reports for reference. In addition, I'm lucky to have grown up with key figures in the movement. Where beneficial, I spoke to them about protests they held, activist meetings where everything went wrong, and events from before my time. If you're approaching this book as a complete novice to this conflict, I hope you will understand that the prohibition system was never made to protect you. If you or someone you know has been caught in the crossfire of this war, I hope these pages will be illuminating. More than anything, I hope to deliver a strong message in a fun package. Prohibition doesn't work. It is time to legalize everything. Introduction. Jury selection. This book is about how the law can be a bludgeon, a weapon, a curse, but also how one person can use nothing more than metaphysics to defeat those powers one by one, kind of like the Hindu goddess Kali, after whom my security dog, a Belgian Malinois, is named. In the writing of this book, I have read various memoirs, stories of addiction, histories of the drug war and its combatants, and the journals that have quietly collected dust in the corner of my grandmother's kitchen. I set out to write a memoir, or more accurately, a story of my life and the role that drugs have played in my life. But over the course of my reading, and through conversations with family, friends, colleagues, and experts in these fields, I realized my story could not possibly contain all there is to say about drugs, the legalization movement, or addiction. The task ahead unfolded into a many-headed hydra. I could not conclude one chapter without multitudes more sprouting up, begging for their place in the narrative. Daunted by the size of this beast, I found myself retreating to what my original hopes for this book had been, to the reasons I had wanted to tell my story and write this book. I read more memoirs. They were sometimes lush and at other times painful. In my favorite ones, I found a truth revealed, but I noted that this truth was inevitably limited by the perspective of the narrator. I questioned my own reliability and whether I was worthy of meeting the challenge that this work posed. Memoir often requires distance, and I couldn't be closer to the subject matter I was taking on. This wasn't just a story about me. It was about my family and the work I'd been called to pursue. I couldn't step far enough away to make sense of my story, partially because I've never been able to detach. The removal with which some are able to tell the stories of their lives is a skill that continues to elude me. Then I turned to general nonfiction, believing there I would find the answer for what this book could become. I read works like Dreamland, Chasing the Scream, and Smoke Signals. I made sense out of decades I had never seen with books on the 50s, 60s, and most of the 70s. These histories were thorough, well-crafted, and often inspirational. Yet the prospect of removing myself from the book and approaching it from a purely journalistic standpoint seemed impossible. I was seized by what has been a lifelong yearning, if not a compulsion, to share my story, all parts of my story. But where does that story begin? Does it begin with me? Does it begin with my parents? With their parents? With the very creation of the universe? Again, there was too much to consider. Paralysis took hold. Years passed. The first revelation, I was afraid. Even now, as I write these words, I am still afraid. There are parts of my story, specifically a problematic cocaine habit in my 20s, that I am afraid to share for fear of professional and personal retaliation. I'm not just an attorney or the daughter of an attorney. I am also a mother. I am a mother who is...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?